Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. My guest today is Dr. Ardeshir Mehran. Ardeshir is a psychologist, behavioral researcher, and leadership coach who challenges conventional notions of depression. Holding a PhD and a master's in education from Columbia University, Ardeshir draws from over 30 years of experience in counseling, organizational psychology, and research, guiding global leaders and operational teams across diverse industries. Ardeshir's groundbreaking approach, the Bill of Emotional Rights, offers a revolutionary cure for depression, a method applied successfully to heal both himself and countless clients. Through the Dr. Mehran method, he guides clients to stronger, faster, and longer-lasting outcomes, drawing upon over three decades of experience. We're excited to have Ardeshir with us today to discuss his new book, You Are Not Depressed, You Are Unfinished, and his Bill of Rights Regarding Emotional Health. Ardeshir, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to be with you.
Very nice to have you here. You know, I'm excited in our show today to get into your cure for depression, but before I do, you know, I know that most of us in the healing sciences have a personal story of our own and one that, you know, often sets the direction that we pursue in our professional lives. And you shared that your method of working to help countless others come out of their own healing process. We would be just, I think, thrilled to learn more about what your story is and what your personal journey is. Yeah, and how you've taken that into your work. What has been your personal story?
Thank you. Maybe a bit of, you know, the information that nobody talks about it, that when I was in graduate school, one of my professors, we were chatting, said that, Arashi, do you know therapists, healers, all the way to Sigmund Freud? These are the children of depressed mothers. So I said, what are you talking about? My mom was just fine. What are you talking about? Only to realize that, in fact, that is true. Talk to any healer in the field of healing that you realize they've been trying to fix a pain, a sorrow along the life. And in fact, there's a term that we do research, but really is me-search. They saw pain, sorrows, and they went on a lifelong quest to make things better. That is true for anybody in this business. If they're honest, they share with that. They're trying to see something from their beginning. That's my story, and I didn't know it. So when you grow up in a family that is hurt, trauma, depression, you think everybody's like that, and I accepted it. Except I knew that I wasn't right, and I didn't know why. I was a misfit. And I just didn't want to be around people, didn't want to be around my family. So I created my own group of friends and buddies who would hang around together. Went, I want to become a farmer. For some, my aunt says, go become a psychologist. I had no idea what psychology is. Became a top student in my undergraduates, top student in the doctoral program, Columbia University, triple major. I have four masters. I have so many degrees, it's embarrassing to mention that they're not in my resume. But it wasn't a degree. I was trying to answer question, what is mental health? And I became disillusioned with field of therapy. I was a very good therapist. That's what my professor told me, my patients. But I felt that all we do when we help people manage their symptoms, we are not healing them. So I left the field four times. This is the truth. I left graduate school, got my degree, went to corporate environment. Did my corporate executive in charge of leadership development, transformation, culture. Life kept finding me. Leaders would come and say, can you talk with me? He said, let's go for a drink. I want to talk with you. And I learned there's a story behind people's story.
Yes.
That they don't even tell their psychologist because they don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be diagnosed. And I felt there's a story people want to share with somebody who get their story.
Yes.
When I listened to their stories, they would disturb me. They would shake me because I felt it's my story and I couldn't understand it. Number two, I realized when they tell their stories, there's a structure to their stories. They are seeking something. different words, different narrative, different context, but they are telling us stories that of the things that went wrong in their life. They were mm-hmm. off track. They were element of coming home. And after a while says, okay, I'm going to go to process analysis. I don't want to work for people. You know, I just want to work in the business part of the business. It was the same thing. People said, let's go talk. And so what I did, I'm a good researcher, one by heart, my brain captures data. And I start to categorize, what are people telling me? I had so many post-it notes all over my house. And I start to realize there's a theme here. People are talking about coming home, finding themselves, but there are some repeated stories. And if you call it out, bring it out, says, hey, it seems you're saying this. It seems you're looking for that. People say, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I was doing that. I was feeling all this sensation in my heart that, oh my God, this makes sense to me. That was the genesis of the Bill of Emotional Rights, that we just don't get mentally ill. Illness, mental illness is an adaptive response.
Yes.
We're trying to survive by the way that life smacked us in the face and took us in a different environment. To heal, we need to know what didn't happen for us.
Right.
Symptoms are a wake-up call. That's the reason people in the clinical field, they know that depression is almost like a gum at the bottom of your shoe. You can't get rid of it. But if you understand what depression is, if you listen to a story of depression, everything's right there.
That's right.
People want to come home. And that was my story. And I started to do that, and I changed my view of therapy. So people come to me and says that, and literally go like this to me, point their fingers, you get me. Say that I've been to therapists, psychiatrists, coaches, and they all get more diagnosis, more action plans. But talking with you, I find me. I find what happened to me in life, and I come coming home.
I really like this. There's a lot of nuggets right there in the things that you just shared. And I love that statement. There's a story behind the story.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we've said before, you know, the eye can't see itself. But when we have a relationship with somebody who's listening to us, really deeply listening and listening for maybe what are some of the core conflictual relationship themes that tend to thematically repeat themselves in someone's life that they've never seen before.
Yeah.
And basically understanding there's a structure to the way people go through their lives, but they don't necessarily understand it. We might, you know, say someone's caught up in a repetition compulsion, trying to put a different ending on the same old beginning.
Yeah.
And trying to understand what is going on that's driving me in my life. And I don't know all that's going on, so much unconscious.
Yeah.
And how our best attempts to manage those things in our lives actually create some of the struggle, because we're trying to manage things around our unmet needs.
That's
and right. Our struggle to do so begins to manifest symptoms, which manifest depression, anxiety. But they're indicators, aren't they, like you're saying, that there's something that hasn't been quite fixed or hasn't been structured in a way that's actually moving from a struggle to maybe something that can allow somebody to really grow.
Yeah, that's right. I have a phrase, I say that, and I know I get criticized a lot, that psychology should not be trusted to psychologists. We can complicate things. So I hang around with artists, with architects, with designers, that they see things differently. People are complex. We are not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You use the term structure. I love that term. Depression as a structure. Anxiety as a structure.
Yes.
OCD, manic depressive, schizophrenia, they have structures. Mm-hmm. Once you know the structure, healing is literally is reverse engineering. Yeah. It shows you when you went off track.
Right.
And when you work with a client, you show that, hey, this is what's going on. Like when people come to me with depression, I go like this. I bring my hand. I say, dear friend, this is what's happened when you're depressed. Somewhere along the line in your life, there are experiences you didn't get to have.
Yes.
Nobody told you. Nobody introduced you to you. Or you had them not at the right level. Or they were violated. Once you know that, healing is claiming what was yours all along. Is it about claiming you, claiming your story, claiming what is your right, emotional right?
Yeah.
Healing is restoration. Like I do, part of my hobby is I restore old wood. And the very first thing you do, take the crap out of it.
That's
all
right.
The varnish, paint, all that, go to the wood and say, wow, this wood is beautiful.
Yeah.
Then surrender to the wood. If it needs any varnish, anything needed, see what's works for this wood, old doors. Bring the beauty that was covered with all this muck on top of that. That's how healing's all about. Get everything else out of the way to the essence. That's where healing starts.
Let's go back a little bit into that. I love this analogy. So from your work, as well as your research and your experience in providing treatment, what has then become of your understanding of both, let's say, depression and anxiety, two of our most, you know, diagnosed mental health? What's your understanding of these?
Thank you. So we can be very anxious, but not depressed.
Yes.
But whenever depression exists, almost always anxiety is there.
That's right.
These two feed each other. Mental illness, one of the puzzling aspects of mental illness, we go to a therapist for depression, for obsessive compulsive, and so on. Mental illness categories, usually they work in pack. There's a group of them together. You can't just go to heal depression. You need to look to see what is keeping the depression intact, because there's also could be trauma, unhealed trauma. So depression at its core is a sense of grieving, sense of loss, sense of that somewhere along the life. And I talk about there are three losses usually, three categories of losses. You're grieving disconnection for something and you know it. You're yearning to find something. Anxiety is a sense of you're looking for predictability, control, and stability. You're going to free fall. Stress is when there are things happen, something's going on, you need to balance. Anxiety lodges in the body, you're trying to get some stability. Anxiety, you feel it in your core, in your nervous system. You're unsettled. You're trying to say, what's going on? You need to find a stability. Depression is that, where do I go? What do I do? Mm-hmm. Anxiety is a state of being. Depression is a state of becoming. Depression relates to a verb. I become this. I do this. It's really yin and yang. That's the reason you want to work with depression. You need to deal is the person has a balanced nervous system. That's the reason talk therapy actually, I was trained as a psychoanalyst. I can do all the cognitive behavior therapy, all that. They don't really work. You don't start with verbal language. You start with the somatic, bring the body.
That's exactly right.
Bring the body, help the person settle, find themselves. Then in that context, you don't ask them how you feel. That's the cognitive aspect. That's it. What's coming up for you? When you do that, because we think pain, something we ignore. No, pain is data. Pain is speaking with you.
Right.
Churning gut, heart palpitation, shoulder pain. These are all, you know, like signals, men and women differently. They are speaking to you. Bring them to the conversation, because element of healing is about becoming whole. Mental illness is a signal that we've broken apart. Healing is becoming whole. So the work a healer does, inviting the person in different ways to become whole. Depression means that there are needs unmet. Anxiety means that the ways you're unsettling and you cannot even settle to become whole again. So once you reveal that, and I tell them my clients from the get-go, this is what's going on. Now work together. Where do you want to start? And people say, where do I start? With your breath. With your energy right this moment. There's no such thing as past. This moment you're sitting with me, if you settle, all the wisdom you need to have is right there in your breathing and how your body is, that's where you start right now.
That's a beautiful process. You know, we say we've got a healthcare system, we've got a sick care system.
We don't
focus on the health piece. And what you're describing is we have such a tendency to focus on the symptoms rather than the story underneath. Right. And the story you put to it, I would imagine, allows people to kind of almost take a 10,000 foot view of something, and or maybe a 10,000 immersed view into something of what's really deeply underneath. So depression is really just a sense of grieving and mourning, recognizing that maybe certain emotional experiences did not happen in the way that they needed them to. And they didn't get maybe a full experience emotional experiences to achieve emotional resolution around something. And the anxiety piece kind of goes, you know, in tandem with it around they've lost a sense of control and predictability, and helping them refine that control and that balance, that sense of balance that can come with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With our illnesses, symptoms, we tell a story. So people who work with me, they notice, they come in and says, they tell me their diagnosis. And afterward, they say, you didn't even use my diagnosis. And I tell them, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's a data point. Mm-hmm. You're telling a story with all your being, how you sleep, the food you have, the way you're sweating right now. That's the story. Yeah. And if you stay with the diagnosis, you create a tunnel vision. And that blinds us, actually. Look at the person with their way, their symptoms, they're telling a story. Have that story be revealed and explored and go deep with that. And once people learn that, they can heal themselves. So in fact, people who can work with me, they know this. I don't believe in open-ended therapy. You come with me 5, 10, maybe 15 sessions, you're good to go, starting from the first session. And if people want to meet with me, some of them do, and I tell them, this is about a different way of therapy. This is, you want to have an advisor or a buddy, somebody, a confidant. You are good to manage your life. You don't need to pay me anymore. And once you learn this, you can self-heal yourself going on.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Are you preparing for a licensure exam in psychology, social work, marriage and family therapy, counseling, or behavioral analysis? AATBS is here to help. We have been supporting behavioral mental health students to prepare for their licensure exams for more than 45 years, working with over 1 million students to succeed on test day and move on to the next step in their career. With products ranging from comprehensive courses to quiz banks and delivered live online, self-study online, and in print, AATBS has test prep solutions that meet every student's needs and learning styles. Visit us today at aatbs.com. That's aatbs.com. And use promo code BHT15 to save 15% off your next purchase.
I know your work is built around what you mentioned earlier, the Bill of Emotional Rights, as we kind of take what we're describing so far around the depression, anxiety, help us understand what this Bill of Rights is and how does this help folks see a roadmap with your help for healing?
Beautiful. So when people come to me, as I listen to their stories, this is what I pay attention. I tell them what I'm listening for. Let's say, Graham, you're meeting with me.
Yes.
I would ask them that, who is around you? Do you feel a sense of connection? Sense of somebody sees you, loves you as you are. Doesn't mean that you don't mess things up or you make people frustrated. There's a sense of loving, being in the company of others that somebody sees me. I matter to somebody. Somebody loves me. This is about the need I belong. This happened right at birth. This is early attachment connection with the mother or like a caring individual.
And it's before words, isn't it?
Before words, it starts, you know, going to womb, that we feel like, you know, that early interaction with the caregiver, that when we look at, I raised a son, when you look at the eyes of an infant,
right,
with your face, with your words, with your mouth, with your body calmness, when you hold the baby, baby says, I am connected here. I have a community. Somebody looks at me, a smile. And then the people say, I'm good. And that gets reflected back. So what I shared with you is for the textbook. I've yet to see anybody has that fully. Caregiver is busy. They're anxious. They're dealing with their own trauma. They just have so much time with their other kids. So people go through life with some level of isolation and loneliness. So my work these days with a lot of high performers, the corporate environment, people who are adored in room full of people and they are lonely. They are married, they are lonely. They are looking for attachment. So that mess us up. That is the wound that we don't have words for it. We don't acknowledge it, but we are looking for a deep connection. So that's one. The next one, I pay attention to the gram if you work with me, and I tell them that if you're sitting there, you're sensing your body, what's coming up for you? We don't know our bodies. All we do is just, we're talking heads. Our body is the vehicle for us, bring us from room to room, from place to place. We just have a heart here, gut here, legs, hips, all of that. We only pay attention to them when we're in pain. Mm-hmm. We actually experience the world with our bodies. This is what is coming up from the research, from trauma research, from Veteran Affairs Hospital working with PTSD. Brain knows words, can categorize information, feelings. We don't feel it in our brain. It's our entire body.
That's right.
We even do common research. In my book, I talk about when we, in rooms, classrooms, we ask students or employees to get up and move around, brainstorming, we get better data, faster data, deeper data, more creative. Our entire experience is with our bodies. Mm. So when we, part of the need is, I call it, I'm boundless, that we are a creature of nature. When we look at our physiology, we are born to run, to pounce, to climb, to be active. Our Western world put emphasis on the world. Again, raising a kid, by the time they are 4 or 5 years old, tell them, sit there, be quiet, put your hands down, use your words. We teach people to break their body. Don't express anything. Versus we are active creatures. We don't know how to use our bodies. Mm. This, again, introducing people to their own body. So you see in my office here, people come in my therapy, we are hardly sitting. When people say, I'm angry, I invite them, show me anger. Show me anger. Realize people, they don't know, they use words, but they don't know anger actually is in our
It's held in their bodies, yeah.
Show me. People want to work on their persuasion. So show me persuasion. Do Katy Perry's roar. Show me your roar. Versus just use words.
Right.
Project your energy. The next need is I'm complete. Many of us, that was me for the longest time, we go through life with sorrow, with pain, shame, and guilt. We're trying to fix yesterday's wars. Once we know the physiology, there's no such thing as past. That we perpetually live in the moment. So when people come to me, they have energy, they're in pain. What that pain means, there are experiences that they still have emotional charge waiting to be resolved right now. By going and tell me what happened with your mom, dad, have you raised, it is actually not helpful. We re-traumatize people.
Yes, it does.
It just, remembering is about energy, blood, energy, not rest. So you ask people, tell me what's coming up for you. What is one thing you can do to release that energy?
So you actually have them lean into that somatic experience and hold it, trusting that it's going to work itself through if they can just be held in that process and trust it.
Absolutely. So to that point, we cannot change unless we have body memory.
Yes.
So in that somatic experience where things that held back, I invite them, what is one thing that is tiny, got to be tiny, and is joy-based and is more action-oriented versus not doing? Instead of not doing something, what is one thing you want to do? That's how we get traumatized. Basically, we lose our voice, our power. What is one thing you can do right now? It's tiny, that takes you back, that you show something. Mm. So you create a new way of being and doing right now. This is about being, I'm complete, that you find yourself and you take you back from then to now, you own your life right now. The next need is I matter. We are connected creatures. We live in communities. This is about respect, about honoring, included, being seen, being invited. Being a corporate executive, I would see they're sitting in the room. People enter the room. Nobody sees them. Quiet. Right. They don't say anything. Nobody calls, turn around, says, Barbara, John, Rose. They're invisible. This is about when you're part of community, you literally create space. You turn around, see people, smile at them so they know they matter. That this is actually psychological. We know from research, one of the reasons for all this mass shooting, they're basically guys, men, that what they talk about, they are seen as being invisible.
Yes.
And through their act of violence and committing suicide, homicide, they're saying that I exist. I exist.
You can't miss me anymore.
You can't miss me anymore. I go in the news and then I'm somebody.
Yeah.
This is about when you're invisible, creates severe neurological impact on us and tear us apart. Part of that is that when you raise kids, how do you see them? How do you honor them?
Mm.
How do you invite them to be, take your place among the people in this community of your church, of place of worship, work, and so on in the family. You have a place. I matter. The next one is I make. Year after year, Gallup survey comes out in the U.S., up to two-thirds of employees are disengaged. It hasn't changed for the last 25 years. We know, again, we're having worked with Gallup survey and the work I've done myself. In those groups of high disengagement, you see higher rate, almost three times higher, of depression and anxiety. So what happens, this is people are in the role, it's not right for them. It's not their work. Or it could be corporate culture, could be team environment. Everybody in this world is here for a purpose. You're doing something. Whether you're in the field or farm, corporate executive, you're in the basement, you're doing something. Is that your work? We all have obligations. We all have bills to pay, family, kids in college, car payment. But is that your work? If not, that has a punishing impact on your soul, in your vitality, in your mojo. And you hold back. So this is about find the thing that is yours. And everybody has it. There's no such thing, I don't know what I'm good at. No, you know.
Right.
I can show you. And you know, just look around you, the things you spend your time doing. Once you do that, it becomes love in action. Find your mojo. This is about your mojo.
So that engagement is not just being busy. It's about finding kind of ways that you are uniquely created and maybe gifted and talented and skilled to contribute in a way that's uniquely yours. It has a higher level of meaning.
That's right. That's right. You're good at something. If you're not good at least develop further in the area you're good at. This is about doing your thing. Doing your thing. And then you literally see your energy shifts. You find you. The next need related to this one is I am. This is that Katy Perry I Roar. The way I stumbled upon this one was about 12 years ago. And in my book, I talk about one situation on the stage. I lost my voice. I would see that women executives come to me for presence. In the room full of men and need more self-confidence, and they would say, grab at us. I would notice when they talk with me, there's a tightness around their throat, raspiness. But their voice was almost held back. They were talking about tight jaws, even thyroid problem. And I would notice also they were monotone. Their voice was devoid of any color, any energy. I would call that out. They hated that. I said, what are you doing? You're supposed to teach me how to project
right.
I would tell them that, can you sing me a song? Do you know a melody? They hated it. Then I would give them the book of Dr. Seuss. I have them behind me. Said that, pick any story from your childhood. Tell me a lullaby. Read from that. And when you read that, they would get very, it's almost somebody opened the Pandora and said, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. We all have a story. And the story we tell is in our own voice. This is our soul's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And once you tap into that, you become you. And there's something actually happened at cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
You become a force of conviction.
Mm-hmm.
There are people like we see Martin Luther King Jr. We love what they say, what they talked about. It was their soul's message. Mm-hmm. We all have it. Once you tap into your way of talking, you feel liberated, you feel whole, like almost water washes over you, you are awakened. Many people who are depressed and anxious, they feel they're trying to contain their soul's voice.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean your message is any good. Could be the stupidest idea. You can work on it. But it's finding your courage of speak. You being you versus holding back. So what women do typically, they try to fit in, lose their voice, and they be like a nice girl. They say that this is what I learned as a teenager. Men, they overshoot. They become big macho, pounding the table, and very strong. Versus just connect with people. You don't need to overpower them. Mm-hmm. How do you relate to people in a way that you heard and reciprocate?
That idea right there of that idea of kind of reminding us that in the I am, there's a soul's message there. And if we can recognize that, we get to have agency and ownership. Which of ourself, out of which comes kind of a freedom and maybe even kind of a transcendence into something that we were intended for.
That's right. And that grieving of depression is that, you know, you have a way to say things in your own way.
Yeah.
That somehow eluded you so far. And the final one is the need, I soar. Mm-hmm. There's a statement behind me on the wall by Maya Angelou that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you, an untold story. I have it all over my house, my laptop, that everybody has a story. 8 billion people, 8 billion stories. It's your story. Once you know it, you'll become a force of nature. Nobody messes with you. And your soul feels that, I know why I'm here. So part of my work is helping people get on your soul's work, an I soar message. It's different than purpose. Purpose has a more or less a destination. I soar is where you go with your life. And typically, it is in the space of you fixing something on this earth with your life as you are here. You're doing something different in the service of people around you. In the service of your community, of your garden, of your golden retriever. I have a golden retriever. But you're making a difference. It's the act of service that your life matters for something. Once you tap into that. So all of this helped me find me and realize I was a very successful corporate executive, making money, role model, people around me. But it wasn't my work.
No.
It wasn't. I was born to be a healer. It took me many years to realize that. I was here to learn, to tell people depression actually is your wasting. Get back home. Find your needs, who you are, to bring this for you. And I didn't learn this in school. I learned in the school of life through my own suffering, through listening to people, listening to what they said. And that's my work. And revealing that to the world.
I can't think of a more rewarding pursuit to find out and discover what one's soul work is. I think ideally the task of parents is to recognize the what's oftentimes referred to as kind of the natural bent of a child. Bent meaning what's their design and what are they gifted and talented and uniquely designed to experience, and helping them discover that. And that becomes, like you said, their soul's work. And it's usually in the act of service where we are our most free and our most fulfilled. And I think that's so I soar. I love that. You know, I know you have a process of healing, and some of the strategies you use is, setting, into their bodies, a somatic work of grounding, and then you help them create a narrative. I'm curious about one of the strategies around TechniQuest is the way you describe it. TechniQuest.
Yes.
Using emotional rights as a focus to find awareness of what is missing.
Yeah. So the way that I do that, and is in my book, and I'd be more than happy to send you the link for folks to do that.
Wonderful.
The way you start the somatic, there are three things happening. And I would talk about why these three things matter. You need to be in the state of presence, connection, and agency. So let me give you an example. You're driving, you get rear-ended. And in rapid succession, three things happen. The very first thing, your body goes numb. All your cognitive processes goes numb. What happened? You had, and basically, this is what happened. You go to a state of temporary shock. You're disoriented. You don't feel anything. All you know, your heart palpitation, your breathing more or less stops, your stomach, all the hormone, everything stops. What happens? Next thing you know, quickly you feel isolated. You feel there's a world out there. You are on your own. Is anybody over here? You look around, you're looking for somebody's face, a policeman, another pedestrian or driver. The third one happened, you become paralyzed. You have no agency. This happened to you, a car behind you and all this noise. What can I do? So people go to a state of paralysis. This happens when you go to trauma. So in fact, one of the things to do when you see somebody falling down, a kid's falling down, accident, three things you need to do right away. Right away. And this helps completely accelerate their healing process. The very first thing you do, sit behind them, put your arms, your knee, or hold their hand gently. Because they feel that somebody's holding me. I'm not alone, disconnected. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to tell them how you're feeling. Just hold them so they feel grounded. This is like term of electricity.
Yes.
That you ground them to earth, number one. The things they can say in a very gentle way, say, I'm here. I'm with you. You're not alone. Paramedics are coming. Something like that. So people say that somebody else taking care of the situation. By gentle touch, people, they feel their senses. Hearing your voice, they hear their senses, you're awakening their bodies. You're awakening their body and any sense around that, people get from disorientation to orientation. And then very gently says that, you can say that, do you want me to fix your shirt? I see there's a cut on your knee. Do you want me to cover it? Just give them a choice. Do you want me to take your cap, baseball cap, take it off, put it on? Very gentle voice for them to feel that I have a choice. Presence, connection, agency. So when we go through life experiences, bad relationship, bad bosses, parents, trauma, those three are presence, connection, agency are compromised. Part of the somatic, letting people basically find your feet, find your connection, find your agency. You come to here and now you find yourself.
Yeah.
And once you do that, so the tape that I've sent to people is when I started this work several years ago, my client says, Ardesh, I love the way you give this instruction. So there, I walked him through that. Can you do a tape for me? I like to listen to it. So I just did the tape, send it for them. They start to share it with others. Fine. Then people start to say that I listened to it. This is about 3 years ago. Every night to go before I go to bed. And I said, it's about 17 minutes. They said, I listen 3-4 minutes. I fall asleep. I listen to it before I go to board meeting. My day in the car, I listen to it. What it does basically brings you to here and now. Be in your body and then decide what are your choices to do. Presence, connection, agency. We all have it.
Yes.
Nobody's told us that. And it's not that difficult. That's the nature of kids. Kids do that. Animals do that.
Yeah.
But our way of talking mess that up.
Takes us out of that. And yet that's what we're taught to do. We're taught to be still, exactly. Use our words. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, when we're in a struggle or when, you know, the wheels fall off of things in life, what you're saying here is look for a needed face, you know, look for a needed touch. And I hearken back to just the symbiotic relationship between a mother and a child is, you know, they're suckling and the child's looking up into the mother's eyes. There's touch, there's exchange. And there's a connection beyond words that is absolutely beautiful. I also think about that experiment called the still-faced experiment. Maybe you've seen that. And our listeners, you can look for it online. Just type in still-faced experiment. And what it shows is a young child before words in kind of a high chair type thing. And there's a mother right there just emotionally engaged, sitting in front and mirroring the child's looks. And they're just engrossed in this beautiful interaction. And they're just in the child pointing, and the mom would accentuate that, and just a lovely exchange. And then the mom turns around and then turns back around again. And the mother has a still face with no expression, no affect whatsoever, no words, no affect. and the child doesn't quite know what to do. Yeah. It's actually kind of a little bit of a hard experiment to watch because the child doesn't know what's going on. They're kind of bewildered at first and they don't know how to respond. And then the child begins to panic a wee bit and the child tries to engage the mom and points over here to try to get her to, you know, respond. And the mom doesn't. She maintains that still face. And the child begins to really go into a place of panic. And if you take that to the very end, then you go into psychosis. Because there's nothing there in your life that didn't happen in the experiment, obviously. But that's where it goes. In the absence of that needed exchange that you're saying, looking for that face, looking for that touch. And it's the absence of those things in our lives, like you said earlier, that leads to our connections that we need not being experienced.
That's right. That's right. Beautiful. Let me build on that, Graham, that as I do this work, people who have kids or relationship almost always says, oh my gosh, I messed up raising my kids. You know, like I didn't do X, Y, and Z. It happened to me as I learned this work. Here's the good news. Body doesn't remember. My son is 22-year-old, senior college graduating this year. And I tell him, David, I'm so sorry. I wish I did X, Y, and Z. He said, Dad, stop. You did just fine.
I've apologized more times than my three kids the same way. They're like, Dad, let it go.
That's
dude.
What it is.
Let it go.
The beautiful thing about life, you can always start all over again. Body remembers. Body remembers start all over again.
That's
number
right.
Number one. Number two, in fact, this morning with a client in Switzerland, when we go in situation, pain comes up, says, I wish I did something different. This situation hurts. All it does, that situation reveals your programming. It's not bad. It's not good. Just shows what you learned. Pause into it. Observe it. Go to presence, connection, agency, to emotional rights, and think, what is one thing you want to do right now to create a different experience as the author of your life right now?
That's
right. As the author, tiny bit right now.
That's wonderful. That's returning the agency, or maybe for the very first time, giving someone the realization that they actually have agency. You know, I think you and I could probably go on talking for quite a while here, but unfortunately we've got a hard stop coming up. We're going to have you back on the show. I'd love to continue a dialogue with you because you've got such a wonderful, gentle and inviting approach, welcoming people into understanding what the story behind their story really is. And in that understanding, there is freedom and there is the potential for some resolution around things, also to be able to build in maybe into their lives now, let's just say through finding the right face and finding the right touch that maybe they may not have gotten early on.
That's right.
And doesn't mean that we're only destined to be only as good as what we experience. We get to build those things in now in ways that can be, that are attainable and ways that can be really life-changing. I would love for our listeners to be able to follow up after our show to learn more about you, to learn more about your book. You are not depressed. You are just unfinished.
That's right.
How can they do so?
Thank you. So a couple of things. You know, first, there are people who write me from across the world say that, I just saw your book unfinished. I don't know what's in the book. That's me. And say, can we talk? So, and I tell people by all means that I'm available to talk to anybody because I know what it means to not be unfinished. I saw my loved one's family that they left this earth with the stories in their heart. I saw my dad, my mom, they didn't finish the work. They were great parents. They did what they could. So my book is on Amazon. You're Not Depressed, You're Unfinished. So available, you can see that became Amazon new release bestseller. Do search on Ardeshir Mehran. And there's a lot on my website. You can download the Bill of Rights PDF is there. And write me with any question. You know, like literally, I am an open source. I love psychologists, but medicalized mental illness to the point we feel that we need to do a lot of crazy things. No, we don't. Go back to basics, to original design. Everything is there.
Sometimes we tell people their story about their story rather than understanding what their story is behind their story. And I think it's kind of turning the tables on that. If you would, give us a verbal message around your website. What is the website folks can follow up? And we're going to put this on our site as well, but just give us a verbal on that.
Yeah, so the website is ardeshirmehran.com. And then what you will see, there's a statement, is my manifesto. And the very manifesto is that you've been living a lie. that depression is the cause of your unhappiness. And I talk about that actually your happiness is the struggle we have to live that life that I need to be on, not depressed. No, depression is actually, if you know what it is, it's the sideshow. So I talk about one of my principles about what that is. The next one is about the bill of emotional right. What is it? And how do you find it? So the people who read my book, I talk in each one of those seven needs. What is the science behind this? What is the background of research? A story of people just like us. How did they work with that? And what is also in the book, each one of those bill of rights, there's a Spotify link to 10 songs, contemporary songs, that once you learn those bill of rights, actually realize that it's all around us. People in country music, you know, Adele, Bruce Springsteen, you name it, all the way to Frank Sinatra, they talk in those rights. Suddenly people's languages in art, music, science become clear to you.
Yes.
You with your kid, with your manager, with your partner. Ah, he's saying this, she's saying this. Suddenly language, realize what people are saying. You can become really clear around that. Then there are my services. And then, you know, I write, you see my blogs over there. One of the blogs is that, what do you need to know? What is trauma and what do you need to know? I talk about, are you fulfilled? I give you two questions to consider. So it's about being provocative about things to consider. You see my videos, I talk about them on YouTube. So you go there. If this interests you, you can learn a lot in terms of information for you to consider.
Fantastic. Well, Ardashir, I love your heart and I love the gentle nudges you are giving folks to take a look at their story and giving them ways to do so in a really not just healing journey, but a journey that allows them to reclaim and connect and then to live out in a soul's work, service-based way what their life gets to be. So it's been wonderful to have you on the show today. Thank you, Ardashir, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Graham and Amy. I appreciate that. It's been a blessing.
It's been great to have you here as well. You know, I also want to thank you, our listeners, for dropping by and joining Ardashir and me. It's always great to have you with us as well. Regarding our episode today, I want to remind you that it and its resources and all of our other episodes can be found on our webpage at triadhq.com/BHT. Thanks again for being with us on the show, and we'll look forward to having you back with us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.